From the stage to the highway to the night grill. And everywhere I went, time just stood still. And in every town it all came down the same. I've been long gone, and in every dream was the dream that you'd still want me. In every motel room your brown eyes would just haunt me. And in every town I called out your name. I've been long gone, set loose again to chase another payday. Knowing if I could just hold you, I'd be okay. Tell me once again that you're still mine. There was nothing on the highway, there was nothing but the wind. And I couldn't look ahead, I could just see where I've been. From Hartford down to Tampa, Duluth to Malibu. I ran every trick, I told every lie just to get on home to you. I've been long gone, now I'm standing in the doorway of your front home. Ain't this better than a letter or a phone call? Tell me once again that you're still your face. Tell me that you love me one more time. I've been long gone. Hey, true love always comes as a surprise. Can you see your reflection in my eyes? Tell me you still love me one more time. There was nothing on the highway, there was nothing but the wind. I couldn't look ahead, I could just see where I've been. From Hartford down to Tampa, Duluth to Malibu, I ran every trick, I told every lie just to get on home to you. I've been long gone, those nights alone were almost too much to bear. Throw your arms around me and just keep them there. Tell me you still love me one more time. Tell me you still love me.
Lori Lewis, her new album this year called Trees. We heard her sing the Mark Simos song, Quaking Aspen, and then a song by the late great singer-songwriter Bill Morrissey that Lori's always loved this song. And she's now recorded it. It's called Long Gone. And we'll hear two songs by Mel Morrissey himself up next on Kansas Public Radio. And in just a little bit, we also hear from Antje Duvekot from an early recording of hers. Antje coming to Lawrence a week from tomorrow night in the Lead Center Pavilion. Well, here's Bill Morrissey and his debut album, simply called Bill Morrissey, except not exactly. He recorded that in 1984, had very little distribution, and was not particularly happy with the way it turned out sound-wise. So Rounder Records, excuse me, back then I guess it was Philo Records, Rounder Records, let him do the whole album over again. And it's Bill Morrissey, re-recorded February 27th, 1991, his earliest recorded songs, and he's very happy to make a song short if it gets the point across, like this one, Morrissey Falls in Love at First Sight on KPR.
Well, my heart skipped a beat when you walked into the room, and in 5 seconds I was thinking bride and groom, I was thinking bride and groom. Think a man and wife. Never fell in love so fast in all of my life. I know you'd like my friends, and you gotta meet my parents. My dad is pretty funny, and my mom looks like Betty White. I gotta have another drink to figure out a way to introduce myself to you. Tonight I'm lousy on the first night, better by the third. I was raised Catholic, in case you hadn't heard. But I ain't the type of man who lives in dreams and wishes, or walks around the house breaking bread and blessing fishes. If I sent a dozen roses, just out of habit, would you press those flowers in a copy of Babbitt? I need another the drink. I need a cigarette. I ain't giving up. I'm gonna get you yet. I'll give you the rights to my 10 best songs. If you wanna talk, I can talk till dawn right here. I need a word that rhymes with earn. I guess your name is the first thing I ought to learn. I hope you're a Democrat. Hope you like the Red Sox. Hope you like bourbon with a splash of water on the rocks. Bourbon with a splash is the only drink I make. But baby, I could learn. There's a course I could take. You might as well give up. I'm gonna make my move. We could honeymoon in Paris. Hang out at the Louvre. We could winter in the city. Summer up in Maine. And all of this will happen just as soon as I learn your name. Baby and me, we know a good day when we see it. Mid-November, so long fall. Well, as warm days go, this is the last call. Baby and me, we're going out for one last fling, one last howl before the winter snow socks us in till spring. Baby's wearing makeup, she got Chanel number 5. She put on a dress with a little frill. I've got a jacket and a tie. I've splashed on some Hoppy's number 9. I guess you could say I was dressed to kill. We're going out tonight. We're gonna hit the bars in town. We're gonna mingle with the Flatlanders and buy them all day round. The summer's over, autumn's gone, winter's here, turn the page. You're gonna trade my Hawken 50 for a lightweight 20 gauge. We're going out tonight and get as drunk can be. Let my baby drive home, she drinks moderately. Tonight is our last chance. We'll go and blow off steam, cause once the snow hits around here, all you can do is dream and dream and dream and dream.
Bill Morrissey for you here on Kansas Public Radio. Two songs on his debut album in 1984, and he's did the re-recording of those in 1991. We heard two short ones, Morrissey Falls in Love at First Sight and My Baby and Me. The late, great Bill Morrissey, we miss so much. And, you know, Bill was a songwriter who very much embodied the working class ethos of New England, the old industrial towns, usually old and dying industrial towns. That was his background, and it came across in so many of his songs and his way with words. Just a highly literate songwriter. Wrote a great novel, too, called Edson, by the way. Bill Morrissey on Kansas Public Radio. Miss Bill, geez. Carrie Newcomer is on the way here, a brand new one from Brad Yoder. And up next, we're going to hear from Antje Duvekot. She's in concert at the Lead Center Pavilion for the Lead Center Folk Series. That is 1 week from tomorrow night, October the 20th, at the Lead Center. Antje Duvekot. We're going to go back to an early self-released album of hers called Boys, Flowers, Miles, and hear a song called Dandelion, Antje Duvekot on KPR.
When Harry met Sally, it was settled. Mary Jane would fall for Spider-Man. The story was set in stone like Tarzan and Jane, Yoko and you were like my Hollywood movie, butterflies and Central Park kiss. Of course you would pursue me, I was Julia Roberts. I mean, how could you resist? My Warhols, my cab ride all the way home. But I am the 4th of July. I'm throwing you a fire in the sky. You could go blind in my light. You are looking for an orchid.
Antje Duvekot and her song Dandelion here on KPR. That came from her second album back in 2005, and both of her first two albums had very little distribution. This album called Boys, Flowers, Miles recorded at various clubs in the Boston area. And again, the song Dandelion. Antje Duvekot at the Lead Center Pavilion next Sunday night, October the 20th at 7:30 p.m. Tickets and info at the Lead Center box office and online at lead.ku.edu. I'm Bob McWilliams. You're tuned to Trail Mix on Kansas Public Radio. We're going to hear songs from a brand new album by Brad Yoder in just a bit. Up next, Carrie Newcomer and her terrific album from last year called A Great Wild Mercy. We're here and we are Kansas Public Radio from the University of Kansas, 91.5 Lawrence, 90.3 Chanute, online at kansaspublicradio.org.
It was a summer storm that broke the heat. She had a blue umbrella as she stepped into the street. I saw her look up from beneath the brim, a batter of it, and closed it up again. The rain slipped down like unchecked tears, the way that miracles arrive and then disappear. I nodded as I watched her smile and walk away, having just seen the finest prayer ever been prayed. There's a big white sky filled with stars. Feels so close but feels so far. I'm tired of all the rage, tired of all the worry. I'm ready for a great wild mercy. On his arm like a sign. just born restless. Dazzled by the heart and softness of things, sensing the never present goodness still circling on wings. There is news of the world and news of the heart, stories we tell, parcel and part. It'll all unfold, the teller and the told, the stories that will heal us and the ones we let go. There's a big wide sky filled with stars. It feels so close but feels so far. I'm tired of all the rage, tired of all the worry, looking for some peace, trying not to hurry, leaning into something absolutely sturdy.
Tears, leaves scattered on the ground, like countless letters of tan and brown. I remember when they were drifting down as I walk this path through the evening woods. There are muddy tracks of flash of fox that was here and gone. I can sense the souls of those who passed on as I walk this path through the evening woods. As the sun sinks low behind the hill, may I find some peace when the world goes still as I walk this path through the evening. Thank you.
Terry Newcomer with Path Through the Evening Woods, and before that, A Great Wild Mercy. The title of this album came out just a little more than a year ago. It's the latest by Terry Newcomer, and it is full of really wonderful songs and beautifully sung and played as well. Brad Yoder, singer-songwriter based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, has a new album out. We're about to dive into that, and after that, we hear a song from the album this year by the duo Ordinary Elephant. Well, the holiday season swings with KPR's Big Band Christmas set Saturday night, December the 14th at Liberty Hall. The Kent City Jazz Orchestra will be on hand once again. They'll play some Big Band hits, some Christmas favorites too. Tickets for Big Band Christmas are on sale now at the Liberty Hall box office and at Ticketmaster.com. Get all the details at KansasPublicRadio.org. Brad Yoder's new album called Somewhere in the Constellation. We will hear that song, but first we'll hear a song called Box of Tears. And Brad Yoder says this song kind of alludes to something a lot of you listen to singer-songwriters figure out. Songwriters' tendency to memorialize personal sadness. Here's Brad Yoder on KPR.
I got a box of tears. It's such a sad collection, saved over many years. I take them out and count them, cataloged row by row. I still know every story behind all these salty drops in my box of tears. Here in my box of tears, I've got them color-coded. Red is for love that's lost, and green is unrequited. So if you ask why so blue, here's a dropper of tears I cried for you one lonely night with my box of tears. I guess it's clear by cry like you, 'cause girl, you make the rain blush. My tears are rare and few, that's why they're worth so dang much. I sent them all to the lab. The results confirm they're all super saturated. Every drop in my box of tears. A bell. found a second verse that could hold a candle to the first, like the first spark of love when the dark was enough and our hearts were still soft. Can we turn back the clock? No, that'll never be. Oh, that'll never be. As anyone can see, though we may fly when we dream that we wake up to gravity. So that'll never, that will never be. That'll never be. Oh, that'll never be. As anyone can see, though we may fly when we dream that we wake up to gravity. So that'll never, that will never be. That'll never be. Oh, that'll never be. As anyone can see, though we may fly when we dream that we wake up to gravity. So that'll never, that will never be. That dream is your love, never be. As anyone can see, though we
Brad Yoder, two songs from his new album, Somewhere in the Constellation. Originally, I was going to play that song to end the set, but I decided to go with the first song on the album, As Easily as Birds, and before that, Box of Tears, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, bass singer-songwriter Brad Yoder. Again, the album's called Somewhere in the Constellation. We're going to hear Claire Lynch singing Tom Paxton's I Give You the Morning. We're also going to hear the terrific young singer and fiddler Bronwyn Keith Hines and her new album this year. And up next, we'll hear a song from the new album this year by Ordinary Elephant. This album is called Ordinary Elephant, not their first, but this one's just called Ordinary Elephant, produced by Dirk Powell. And here's a song called Walk With You.
Make you coffee every morning. You make me laugh when I'm trying not to. You see me always, I'm scared to. Love me anyway. Now the Swiss Texas sunset is watching us walk off a hard day. But too much to do got in the way. Being who we are, it wasn't their best left for being left behind. But I do it all over to stay shoulder to shoulder. As long as the rain turns to river in this canyon, this canyon turns my every word. I will sing it out, it echoes. Here where the rope goes, I walk with you, I walk with you, I walk with you. Got two dog feet, like bouncing balloons on the inner valley. Kicking up gold dust from the sagebrush, tails to the wind. Now there's nothing like a good dog to show you the joy in a single moment. There's nothing like a good love to make every moment worth it. So I was spinning everyone left to come right where I am, shoulder to shoulder with you. As long as the rain turns to river in this canyon, this canyon turns my every word. I will sing it out, it echoes anywhere the road goes. I walk with you, I walk with you, I walk with you. As long as the rain turns to river in this canyon. This canyon turns by every word. I will sing it out, it echoes. Anywhere the road goes, I walk with you, I walk with you, I walk with you. I walk with you, I walk with you, I walk with you. I walk with you, I walk with you. I will walk with you.
The duo Ordinary Elephant, their album this year of the same name, and that song called Walk With You here on Kansas Public Radio. In just a bit, we're going to hear a terrific young musician, fiddler and now singer, Bronwyn Keith Hines, her first album featuring her lead vocals. And she's been out on the road a lot in the past couple of years with Molly Tuttle. A terrific young talent, Bronwyn Keith Hines, is on the way, but not before we hear the wonderful voice of Claire Lynn. She's one of 12 singers on the album Bluegrass Sings Paxton, with a lot of great folks interpreting their favorite Tom Paxton songs, including Claire Lynch's version of Tom Paxton's I Give You the Morning, here on KPR.
Ever again the morning creeps across your shoulders.
Great singer, and I Give You the Morning, great song by Tom Paxton. That is one of 12 songs in this new collection by bluegrass artists of Tom Paxton's music. It's called Bluegrass Sings Paxton. Support for Trail Mix on KPR comes from the Lead Center, welcoming eclectic folk singer-songwriter Antje Duvekot Sunday, October 20th, 7:30 p.m. in the Pavilion. Tickets are available at lead.ku.edu. Well, here's one of the finest young musicians of the fiddler and two of the singer on the bluegrass, the country, folk, Americana sing in Nashville. Her name is Bronwyn Keith Hines. I first heard her about 7 years ago in the early years of a band called Mile 12 and was completely blown away. She's been touring the last couple of years with Molly Tuttle. She put out a great album, I think 3 years ago, of fiddle music. And now she's singing lead and playing fiddle too. The album is called I Built a World. We're going to hear a song called Trips Around the Sun with Dirk Bentley helping out on the vocals. It's Bronwyn Keith Hines on KPR.
Singing happy birthday. Better think about the wish I made, 'cause this year gone by ain't been no piece of cake. Just another revolution. Pull it together and it comes undone. Just one more candle and a trip around.
Bronwyn Keith Hines, Trip Around the Sun, guest harmony vocals from Dirk Bentley and such notable bluegrass musicians as Jerry Douglas and Scott Festel and Dom Leslie and Brian Sutton, part of the band, with Bronwyn Keith Hines. The album's called I Built a World here on KPR.
Stardate, October 12th. By the early 17th century, European sailors were being guided through southern seas by several birds, not on the wing, but in the stars. Five southern constellations were named for birds: the peacock, toucan, crane, and bird of paradise, plus a mythological bird that's well known to Harry Potter fans, the phoenix. All of these constellations were outlined by Johannes Baer in a star atlas published in the early 1600s. Those parts of the sky were unknown to Europe until explorers began heading southward. They mapped the stars and brought their observations back to Europe. A Dutch astronomer connected the stellar dots to create a dozen constellations, which Baer depicted in his atlas. Most of the birds are so far south that they're impossible for most American sky watchers to see. But one of them strides low across the south on October evenings, Groose, the crane. If you're south of about Denver, look for the crane strolling along the horizon in early evening, with its neck extending low into the sky. The star that marks the crane's head is visible from most of the country. It stands due south about 10 o'clock, almost directly below the gibbous moon. The farther south you are, the higher the star appears. Known as Gamma Gruis, the star is much bigger, brighter, and heavier than the sun. It shines at us across more than 200 light-years of space. The bright eye of a beautiful southern bird. You can find out how to subscribe to our daily program at stardate.org. For the University of Texas at Austin McDonald Observatory, I'm Billy Henry.
Support for Stardate on Kansas Public Radio comes from the Topeka Zoo, offering zoo memberships for individuals and families alike for unlimited admission to the zoo year-round. Details on the benefits of a Topeka Zoo membership can be found at topekazoo.org.
On the next Retro Cocktail Hour, we'll hear from the Modern Mambo Quintet, La Bandada Mancini, and the jungle drums of Juan Esquivel.
Calabari.
I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music is always shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour, Saturday night at 7 on KPR.
We're here and we are Kansas Public Radio from the University of Kansas, KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, 91.5, KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, 89.7, KANV and KANV HD1 Oldsburg Junction City, 91.3, KANQ Chanute, 90.3. Listen on the web at kansaspublicradio.org or tell your smart speaker to play Kansas Public Radio. I'm Bob McWilliams. Thanks for being with me on Trail Mix this afternoon. With All Things Considered just ahead, and I'll be back with another edition of Trail Mix, a new one tomorrow from 1 till 4. Support for Trail Mix on Kansas Public Radio comes from the Lead Center, welcoming eclectic folk singer-songwriter Antje Duvekot, Sunday, October 20th, 7:30 p.m. in the Pavilion. Tickets are available at lead.ku.edu. It looks like an end to the really hot weather we've been having. Overnight tonight, lows around the mid-50s, and tomorrow, sunny, breezy winds out of the north, and much cooler tomorrow, with highs in the mid-70s, highs on Monday in the mid-60s here in northeast Kansas.
Having to do this while being battered with hurricanes makes it even more difficult, but it also reminds us how powerful and important community is.
Some Floridians observed Yom Kippur even as they picked up the pieces left in the path of Hurricane Milton. For Saturday, October 12th, it's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Ralph Schmitz. Coming up, we'll take you to Hawaii, where women are competing in a 41-mile canoe race that was once reserved for men.
After doing all the regattas and watching the men do the channel, it's kind of like, why not us, right?
And we'll speak to the director of a new documentary that follows a country music duo from a tiny kingdom in Africa, who arrived to country music's heartland in search of their American dream.
It was like walking into their wildest country music fantasies, and you could see that in their eyes.
All that's coming up. News is next.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. 3 days after Hurricane Milton slammed Florida's west coast, residents are still having a hard time finding gasoline. Sky LeBron from member station WUSF has more.
Autumn Boyd says she's been waiting 2 hours to fill up her tank on her 3-gallon motorcycle.
I had to use PTO in order to be here, and I've just been using my vacation hours to sit in line.
Andrew Thomas says he's been waiting 5 hours to get gas. He says finally getting to the pump will be a huge relief.
It's going to be like riding on a roller coaster. Once you waited in line for all that time for 5 minutes of good joy, you know. And then halfway during the week, you're going to be like, I got to do this all again.
Governor Ron DeSantis announced the state has opened 3 fuel depots in the region to help meet the demand and plans to open more. Residents can get up to 10 gallons of free gas at the depots. For NPR News, I'm Sky LeBron in Tampa.
Vice President Kamala Harris released a report on her medical history this morning. Her campaign sees it as an opportunity to contrast the 59-year-old Democratic nominee with 78-year-old Donald Trump. NPR's Asma Khalid has more.
This is the first time Harris has released a medical report. Harris's medical summary concludes she is in, quote, excellent health and possesses the physical and mental resiliency to successfully execute the duties of the presidency. It also indicated she has seasonal allergies, takes vitamin D supplements, and wears contacts. The Harris campaign sees the release of her medical report as a way to focus attention on how little is known about the health of Trump, who is 78. Last year, Trump released a brief note from his doctor who said his overall health was excellent and, quote, his cognitive exams were exceptional. On Saturday, a Trump spokesperson said that remains the case. Asma Khalid, NPR News.
Meanwhile, Trump is attending the Hispanic Roundtable near Las Vegas, and later he heads to a rally in Coachella in Southern California. Harris campaigns in Greenville, South Carolina, tomorrow. President Biden is calling on Israel to stop hitting UN peacekeepers in its strikes in Lebanon. The UN says Israel has repeatedly fired on its peacekeepers. UNIFIL has 10,000 soldiers from 50 countries monitoring the border between Lebanon and Israel. NPR's Jane Arraf has more from Beirut.
The incidents include Israel positioning tanks just a few yards away from UN peacekeepers, opening fire on a UNIFIL observation tower, collapsing that tower. Israel says it was targeting Hezbollah nearby. UN soldiers were injured in the attacks.
NPR's Jane Arraf. Israel told UNIFIL to move back from the ceasefire line, but UNIFIL is there to act as a deterrent. This week, an Israeli strike in Lebanon hit an apartment building, killing more than 20. This is NPR. New research is shedding fresh light on the connection between young adults' success in college and careers and the kinds of learning opportunities they had as children. NPR's Corey Turner has more.
Researchers have long known that childhood poverty creates barriers that can last a lifetime. But findings from a 26-year longitudinal study help explain why. Researchers studied children growing up at various income levels, and they tried to measure their access to different opportunities, especially educational opportunities. Things like early childhood care, high-quality classrooms, and organized after-school activities. And the study found lower-income kids, in general, have access to far fewer opportunities than higher-income children. And that opportunity gap is strongly linked to a later gap in college attainment and earnings. Corey Turner, NPR News.
More than 4,300 hotel workers in Boston, San Francisco, Seattle, and Honolulu are on strike today. It's all part of a wave of hotel strikes that started on Labor Day. And while the affected hotels, which include Hilton, Hyatt, and Westin, do remain open, some of the services have been curtailed. Meanwhile, more than 700 employees at the Hilton Hotel in San Diego returned to work after a 38-day strike. The union and that hotel came to a new labor agreement that includes improvements to workers' wages, health benefits, and staffing. I'm Janine Herbst, and you're listening to NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations.
Other contributors include the Joyce Foundation, committed to advancing racial equity and economic mobility for the next generation in the Great Lakes region. Learn more at joycefdn.org. This is NPR.
Here's a look at the KPR weather forecast. It's 92 and fair. Wind is west-southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the low 50s. Wind will be from the northwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the mid-70s. Wind will be from the north at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 40s. It's 92 and fair.
Stay tuned for more KPR weather. I'm Maria Lopez.
It's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Rob Schmitz, in for Scott Detrow. About 1.4 million customers are still waiting to have their power turned on again in Florida. That represents significant progress, though, since more than 3 million lost power during Hurricane Milton. President Biden has signed a major disaster declaration for Florida, which allows FEMA aid to flow to people in 34 counties affected by the hurricane. NPR's Martin Costi has been following recovery efforts in the Tampa Bay area.
Two full days after Milton, Floridians on the Gulf Coast are getting a clearer picture of the damage. The most dramatic destruction is right on the coast, around Sarasota, but more broadly, around Tampa Bay, it's mostly shredded roofs and downed trees. The two most common problems are power outages and a shortage of gas. And those two problems are connected when gas stations don't have power to run their pumps.
I've been here for an hour now.
Jack Cabrera is near the head of a line of cars that stretches down the highway at one of the few functioning gas stations in the inland residential area just east of Tampa.
They said they got a shipment in at like 3 in the morning, and then everybody wakes up and they come here. So there was someone that walked by earlier that said that they were going to start running out soon. I'm just going to see if I can get some, you know.
Around the same time this morning, Governor Ron DeSantis was holding a press conference a few miles away in Plant City, at one of the emergency fuel depots that the state has set up.
These are free for people. We're doing 10 gallons a customer. So you go, you get it, and you can be on your way.
Looking at the broader picture of where the damage is, DeSantis says the Tampa Bay region did not get the huge storm surge that some had feared.
But what you ended up seeing is just massive on the north side of the storm, huge amounts of water. You did have wind, of course. And so that created inland situations.
That's a fan boat from the Sheriff's Department patrolling Williams Boulevard in Lithia. It's one of the streets flooded by the Alafia River. Terry Rudd's house is on one of those streets. He says the house came through the storm okay at first.
So I came back home Thursday afternoon, you know, to start cleaning up and everything. And then my sister's coming home like 7:30, 8 o'clock at night. She's saying, you have to get out of there. The river is going rising like crazy.
So he evacuated his house again, this time fleeing the river, not the storm. Now Rudd and his extended family are back here in a parking lot on the edge of the flooded neighborhood. They're pumping up kayaks.
Okay, so what we're going to do is we got these blown up, and we're just going to get on them, and we're just going to go down, and we're going to see how far the water actually got up.
Tiffany Nagy is one of his family members, and she says the house, which they haven't yet seen, has a lot of sentimental value for the whole family, especially those who are in the military.
This is where we grew up when we were stationed everywhere. This is where we grew up. This is where we would come home to.
And they launched their kayaks into the murky waters of Williams Boulevard to find out. She later texts that the water did get into the house's living room. But all in all, this kind of flooding has been limited to certain areas north and east of Tampa. For most people, the main concern is getting power back, cleaning up debris, and dealing with some of the more Floridian side effects of a major storm.
That would be an alligator swimming around our retention pond. He's good size.
Chris Ernst lives just across the road from the flooded neighborhood. The houses here did not flood, but the rising river has pushed this kind of wildlife into their front yards.
Normally, we don't see them through here. In fact, earlier this year, this was completely almost dry.
But just then, his daughter, who's come along to look at the alligator, shouts and points out a more welcome arrival, a couple of cherry picker trucks bringing the hope that their power will soon be turned back on. Martin Costi, NPR News, Lithia, Florida.
As millions of people across Florida are still struggling with the effects of Hurricane Milton, some are doing it while trying to observe the Jewish holy day of Yom Kippur.
NPR's Sarah Ventry has more.
Just days before the Jewish New Year, Hurricane Helene made landfall. And just before Yom Kippur, it was Hurricane Milton.
Unfortunately, Yom Kippur will not look the way it has ever before in our community, and not the way we would like it to look.
Shepard Englander is the CEO of the Jewish Federation of Sarasota Manatee.
We don't even know the extent of the damage yet because most of our area has no power, no cell phones, no internet. And so we've been in touch with all the synagogues that we can reach.
Englander says four of the local synagogues sustained damage. Two of them were so bad that he says they won't be able to host services. But the problem isn't just inside temples. Traditionally, Jews fast on Yom Kippur. As the holiday ends at sundown, it's common to get together with friends and family to break the fast. But this year,
people's homes are damaged. Many of the traffic lights are out. The roads are littered with debris.
Englander says this means some people will be breaking their fast alone. The Saturday night meal will be a little more somber, and the menu will be different.
It's going to be very difficult to get those traditional foods that we break the fast with. I mean, right now, the grocery stores haven't been restocked. Many are not even open yet. Food supply is challenging. So people are just going to have to rely on what they have in their cupboards.
Englander says that even though things will be hard this year, he and his community are focusing on the fact that they aren't alone.
Having to do this while being battered with hurricanes makes it even more difficult, but it also reminds us how powerful and important community is.
Sarah Ventry, NPR News.
As we've reported here on NPR, Israel has ramped up its offensive against the militant group Hezbollah in Lebanon. Israel's military says its campaign is aimed at Hezbollah's fighters and infrastructure, but Israeli missile strikes have killed hundreds, including civilians. The heaviest fighting has taken place in southern Lebanon, forcing many to flee to other parts of the country. Many have gone to the capital of Beirut, but some are traveling further north to the city of Tripoli, which has seen an influx of people fleeing the violence. Sarah Al-Sharif is Lebanon director of Ruad Al-Tanmiya, an NGO that works with displaced people in Tripoli. Sarah, welcome to All Things Considered.
Thank you for hosting me.
So, Sarah, Tripoli is Lebanon's second largest city, about an hour's drive north of Beirut. This is a city that has already sort of sectarian divisions within it. It's also a very poor city. And now you have the added weight of refugees fleeing other parts of Lebanon to seek refuge there. What does it look like for them? What kinds of shelters are they finding, and what are the conditions that they're having to deal with in this new home for them?
Now in Tripoli, we're having 30 shelters hosting 16,000 displaced, internally displaced people. 6,000 are within collective shelters, while 10,000 are living outside collective shelters within apartments. So the problem here is not only limited to Tripoli, but also to all the Lebanese cities and villages that are hosting displaced individuals, is that it's not only about collective shelters, because, many, many Tripolitans, they offered their apartments for free for displaced people, while others, they rented their apartments with very affordable prices, also for displaced people. Collective shelters could represent one-third, I would say, of the total number of displaced people, because two-thirds of those displaced are living in apartments, in houses, and not in collective shelters, which make this harder to really keep on track with all the statistics.
Right. You know, I'm also reminded that taking care of refugees in many countries is often a job for the government, but Lebanon's government is obviously struggling. So what does that mean for NGOs like yours?
So for the last, I would say, few years, we found ourselves as local NGOs, honestly, they look at us as if we are the government because of the collapse of the government. So we had to really come together and to work together, closely together, and to showcase solidarity and collaboration to be able to serve our people, the Lebanese, and also the human, I mean, even the refugees, everyone living in Lebanon, we look at them as, you know, human beings and need to be supported. But of course, this is really hard because the government is collapsing, and this has been the case for decades now.
So speaking about these people that you're dealing with on a day-to-day basis and you're trying to help, what kinds of stories are you hearing from them? What are their primary needs?
People, they left their houses without anything. So they just took their family members, if they're still alive, and they flee without anything taken with them. So you need to provide them with all the basics, from food security, food, water, diapers, baby milk formula, you name it. It's a long, long list. I mean, even if they went to shelters, let's say the collective shelters, who said that those shelters are adapted to serve as shelters? These are schools. So they are sheltered at public schools, and everybody knows the public schools, you know, at the end of the day, they need to serve as schools, not as shelters. I mean, classrooms cannot be bedrooms.
Sarah, you mentioned that these are schools that many people are forcing to, you know, are living in right now, essentially. What does that mean for the students that go to these schools?
It's really a catastrophe, because we're gonna live the same effect of Corona, where education has been put on hold, and it's an even more challenging context because we are in a war.
Sarah, is it safe in Tripoli?
I think there's no safe zone in Lebanon, because even if I tell you now it could be a safe zone, then maybe tonight it might not be a safe zone. So it's an hour by hour, minute by minute.
That's Sarah Al-Sharif, Lebanon director of Ruad Al-Tanya, an NGO that works with displaced people in Tripoli. Sarah, thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
From the University of Kansas, it's your place for NPR News, Kansas Public Radio. Available online anytime for you at kansaspublicradio.org. Thanks for joining us for All Things Considered on a Saturday afternoon. Support for All Things Considered comes from the Dole Institute of Politics, hosting former Supreme Court Justice and founder of iCivics, Sandra Day O'Connor, with the Dole Leadership Prize, Thursday, October 24th, 7 p.m. More at doleinstitute.org. And KU Spencer Museum of Art, now showing the exhibition Native Fashion, celebrating wearable artworks created by indigenous people historically and today. Details at spencerart.ku.edu. Tonight in northeast and east central Kansas, mostly cloudy, lows in the mid-50s. Sunny tomorrow and cooler with highs in the mid-70s, a low of 41. For Sunday night. You're listening to Kansas Public Radio.
I'm Janine Herbst with these headlines. Cleanup continues in Florida in the wake of Hurricane Milton and the tornadoes that also hit the state. Gasoline is in short supply with long lines at many stations. The governor says several fuel depots where residents can get 10 gallons free are set to open. Kamala Harris's doctor says she is in excellent health and has the physical and mental resiliency to serve. Her campaign released her medical report today, drawing a line between the 59-year-old and 78-year-old Donald Trump, the oldest candidate to run for the White House. And more than 4,300 hotel workers in Boston, San Francisco, Seattle, and Honolulu are on strike today, part of a wave of hotel strikes that started on Labor Day. I'm Janine Herbst, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Raymond James, a firm focused on transforming lives, businesses, and communities through tailored wealth management, banking, and capital market solutions. Disclosures at RaymondJames.com. From the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at WTGrantFoundation.org. And from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Rob Schmitz.
And I'm Asma Khalid. Race is never far from the conversation in American politics, and that's been the case with the 2024 presidential election and the historic candidacy of Vice President Kamala Harris, who has Indian and Jamaican heritage. Harris herself has not made her racial identity a focal point of this campaign, but it has made headlines involving her opponent. Here's former President Donald Trump during an interview at a National Association of Black Journalists convention this summer.
She was always of Indian heritage, and she was only promoting Indian heritage. I didn't know she was black until a number of years ago when she happened to turn black, and now she wants to be known as black. So I don't know, is she Indian or is she black?
She is always. I wanted to get a sense of how people with similar racial identities to Harris feel about her candidacy and the conversations around her identity. And that's how I met Jaya Krishnan. She's 23, from the Bay Area, and identifies as South Indian and black.
Growing up, especially in a predominantly white environment, for some reason I felt like people couldn't grasp the fact that I was both South Indian and black.
Many decades earlier, in 1959, Jalika Ali was born in New York City. She's also South Asian and black, now age 65, and goes by the nickname Jolly. And she says on the day she was born, there wasn't even an option on her birth certificate for her father's race.
You know, I'm from the days where my birth certificate says my mom's Negro, but my birth certificate says my father's white. But right underneath, where is he from? And they wrote Pakistan.
Like Jaya and Jolly, 52-year-old Hardeep Reddick, who grew up in Baltimore, didn't feel completely seen growing up.
We were always kind of looked at, my sister and myself, especially my sister had more African-American features, I'd say, than I did, was a little darker skin and thicker hair, was always kind of looked at as, you know, those not pure kids, if you will.
Jaya, Hardeep, and Jolly joined me via Zoom earlier this week. All three of them say they are voting for Harris, and I wanted to know how they felt about the way Harris has navigated talking about her identity throughout this campaign, an identity that they share.
She has to go the extra mile. She has to prove to so many different people who can't understand that there could be a mixed family, a mixed relations that actually work. She's holding her own. It's very hard. It's like very hard to know what group you're in front of. What do they know already? How do they already perceive you? Do they just see you as a race, or can they see you as a formidable candidate?
I mean, I didn't really think about like how much she was kind of talking about her racial identity until like the other candidate brought it up. I mean, she does come from two very different cultures, but she has, like, the right to identify, like, with both. And I think that she's been doing a good job of being a part of both.
I think it's also important for her to, you know, put out her identity to the population and to say, look, I come from multiple ethnic backgrounds. We're all Americans. I don't see it as a black and white issue. This is an economic issue.
Do you think that the vice president has an obligation to talk about her racial identity?
I think it's being forced on her to talk about it. I don't know that she has an obligation. I mean, you look at her, you either think she's Indian or you think she's black or you don't care. Then, you know, it's too bad she has to even address this.
I mean, this is about being president is being president for everybody. It isn't like I'm the white president for America or I'm the black president for America. So it's really more about, you know, your character, what you're standing behind, what's the plan for your country. And yeah, I don't think that she's obligated to really go into that. But, you know,
as we spoke about Harris's Indian and Jamaican heritage, one big theme that came up repeatedly was former President Trump's comment that the vice president only recently began identifying as black, which, by the way, is untrue. I asked each of them what went through their minds when they heard his comments.
Well, as I said before, he's uninformed. Should have been something he knew about.
His comments were, like, rude and hurtful, especially as someone who's heard them before, like, throughout my life. So I guess, like, when he said that, it kind of made me realize how much things aren't changing as much as I thought they were. Because when I went to college, it seemed like everyone was more accepting of the fact that I was both. But hearing him say that makes me feel like I've gone back, like, to, you know, elementary school or middle school, where I would get kind of, like, made fun of or just rude remarks for just being from two very different cultures.
Do you feel like the country, the politics, the cultural moment is different now in the year 2024, leading up to this November's election, than the conversations we were having in, say, October, November of 2008?
Yeah, I would say that it's, you know, it depends on where you are in the country, obviously. But the country is becoming more heterogeneous, you know, as we see immigration coming through and all, you know, all different people of different cultures entering into, you know, communities that before maybe were more isolated. I would say that I see a lot less racism in younger people. I see a lot more interracial dating.
I was excited when Obama was elected. I thought, oh, the tide has turned, or it's turning. And then, but Trump's rhetoric and what he's fashioned has brought us back quite a bit.
And Jaya, what about you? I mean, what does it mean for you to be both Black and South Asian now, in this moment, in 2024?
I mean, I think that, especially with the vice president running at this moment, it's a good time to kind of reflect back on my own identity. The ingrained racism within America, it still, like, definitely exists, because people constantly make ignorant comments, or there's still microaggressions out there for people from mixed backgrounds, even though it's not as bad as in the 60s or the 80s. I mean, it's really cool for me to be a woman and to be Black and South Indian and have Kamala running for president.
Jalika Ali, Hardeep Reddick, and Jaya Krishnan, thank you all very much for your time. I really do appreciate it.
All right, thank you so much.
God bless. Take care.
Thank you, Asma.
Whooping cough is spreading nationwide at the highest levels in a decade. There have been four times as many cases of the disease, which is most dangerous to babies, this year compared to the same time last year. From member station KUOW in Seattle, reporter Eilish O'Neill has more.
Whooping cough cases are especially high now on the West Coast. King County, where Seattle is, has seen more this year than any year since 2015. Dr. Eric Chow is chief of epidemiology and immunization at the county's public health agency.
And the year isn't even over yet.
Chow says the county is still seeing new cases of whooping cough, also called pertussis, every week.
More children going back to school now, greater exposure. We're coming up on the kind of winter season when people are spending more time indoors with other people.
Chow says there are a number of possible explanations for the size of the current outbreak. Doctors are testing for whooping cough more, so they're identifying more cases. It's possible that the bacterium that causes pertussis has mutated. But also, people got behind on their vaccines during the pandemic, and they haven't caught up. The children's vaccine against pertussis is delivered with two others and called DTaP.
One of the challenges that we have with DTaP is that it's a five-dose series over the course of 6 years of a child's life. So it does require regular visits to the primary care.
And Chow says not everyone can get to the doctor regularly. But access isn't the only problem.
There still is a lot of vaccine hesitancy and anti-vaxxers out there that will not vaccinate their kids.
Dr. Tina Tan is a pediatric infectious disease physician at Northwestern University and the president-elect of the Infectious Diseases Society of America. For the first couple of weeks, whooping cough looks like a mild cold, but then the coughing fits start. The disease is most dangerous for unvaccinated babies under a year of age.
They're going to be whooping when they cough, and they may cough, 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 and then look like they're not breathing at all.
Dr. Tan says those pauses in breathing are life-threatening and a sign that it's time to go to the hospital. Whooping cough can also lead to pneumonia and other complications. So far this year, there have been 4 confirmed whooping cough deaths in the U.S. and about 17,500 cases. The problem is, babies can't get their first dose of the vaccine till they're 2 months old.
That's why it's important for pregnant women to get the pertussis vaccine when they're pregnant so that you can protect your baby for, you know, that first 2 months of life until they're old enough to be vaccinated themselves.
Even before the pandemic, only about half of pregnant women got the pertussis vaccine. Now, that number's even lower. At a playground in Seattle's White Center neighborhood, Kay is sharing a popsicle with her 4-year-old daughter. She declined to give her last name because she's concerned about revealing private medical information. She says she's always been hesitant about vaccines.
With COVID, it even made it even more scary because everybody started coming out saying like, oh, the COVID shot's not actually good for you. So I was like, maybe the other vaccines are bad too. And then I went down the rabbit hole of looking up like kids who have supposedly gotten vaccinations and passed away.
Experts say vaccines are very safe and can prevent diseases that once killed or harmed a lot of people. Kay got her daughter the shots required for daycare, but nothing else.
It's hard for me to get childcare, and it's just easier for me to say, okay, just give me whatever she needs just to get her into school.
So her daughter did get the required pertussis vaccines, but not any COVID shots, which are not mandated.
Okay, give me a second and I'll be right there. Okay?
Aaron's sitting horse is at the same playground with his 3-year-old daughter. He says the pandemic had the opposite effect on his thoughts about vaccines.
And then that like opened up my eyes to how important they are and everything. And so now I'm a believer in vaccines. It's important, even if it's not for yourself, but for everybody around you.
Sitting Horse says he saw in the news that there's a whooping cough outbreak right now, and it worries him a little, but not too much, because he and his family are up to date on their vaccines. For NPR News, I'm Alicia O'Neill in Seattle.
Tomorrow, hundreds of paddlers will gather in Hawaii to compete in an annual men's canoe race that started in 1952. It's grueling, about 40 miles across open water, and the women's race recently took place. Hawaii Public Radio's Catherine Kluwit-Pachtel reports.
It's dawn on the Hawaiian island of Molokai. The sun rises on 48 outrigger canoes poised on the sand of Halealono Harbor. Hundreds of women are gathered to paddle those canoes across the Ka'iwi Channel to Oahu. It's an iconic race called Nawahine o Ke Kai, or Women of the Sea. The opening ceremonies honor Molokai as the home of the race. 10 women from Molokai's Va'aka Paimua Canoe Club stand beside their canoe, ready to take on an unpredictable ocean and the physical and mental exhaustion of paddling for 7 hours. Crew member Ka'ala English has made the Ka'iwi Channel crossing 6 times. She says being in the va'a, or canoe, allows her to sense her ancestors with her.
I go there to be with them. I get to talk to them. I get to feel them.
Thousands of years ago, canoes brought transportation and exploration for Polynesian cultures, and today's races honor that tradition. A men's competition, the Molokai Hoi, started in 1952, while women raced the channel for the first time in 1979. Out on the water, each outrigger canoe is paddled by 6 women at a time. An escort boat follows each team with more paddlers on board. Near the finish line, teammates cheer as paddlers fight fatigue.
Oh, they're moving nice.
In the early days of the men's race, coaches and officials doubted women could handle the crossing, says legendary Molokai paddler Penny Martin.
After doing all the regattas and watching the men do the channel, it's kind of like, why not us, right?
This year, the Molokai team placed in the top 20. But Martin says paddling is about more than just competing.
That's the other thing about the canoes. It allows us to continue to stay plugged in to our culture.
For NPR News, I'm Catherine Kluwit-Pachtel on Molokai.
You're listening to NPR News. Fall has officially arrived, and with it, in some places, the need to finally break out some of those cozy sweaters. Changing seasons often call for a shift in your wardrobe, but finding the right clothes for your body is not always an easy task. Life Kit's Andy Tagle has more.
Personal stylist Sophie Strauss knows what you're probably thinking.
Caring about your style or your fashion sensibility with everything else going on in your life or the world? How superficial. But our clothes and the way they fit us are a big part of our sense of self. And so when your body changes for some reason, illness, pregnancy, weight gain, just life, and your clothes no longer fit you the way they used to, it can be painful.
Clothes are communication. And when you put your clothes on and they don't feel right, it feels like opening your mouth to speak and the wrong words come out.
Strauss, who's based in Los Angeles, calls herself a stylist for regular people. A lot of her clients come to her in moments of transition. New parents, people working through illness or stepping into new jobs, new gender identities. They often feel overwhelmed because they have a closet full of clothes that don't fit or don't match the person they know themselves to be, or both. In moments like those, she says, you start in an obvious place, the closet.
Let's actually try your clothes on and identify the ones that feel good and the ones that feel bad. And when they feel bad, let's stop and go, why? I know that sounds like, yeah, duh, but most people don't do that.
So maybe carve out an evening where you can reacquaint yourself with the clothes in your closet. This shouldn't be a rushed activity the night of a party or in the 10 minutes before work. Strauss says when you give yourself some time to play a little dress up, you might be surprised by how much versatility you can find in your wardrobe.
You can tuck, you can tie, you can cuff, you can roll, you can, belt, you can layer. There are just things you can cinch, right?
Start to notice what is and isn't working for you and how you talk to yourself about it. Strauss says her clients will often say things like, this just isn't doing me any favors, or I'm just not pulling this off.
And usually, quite frankly, what people mean by it is it doesn't make their body look thinner.
But Strauss says you have to shift that mindset. If a shirt doesn't fit,
you're not failing the shirt. The shirt is failing you.
Then get specific about how exactly that piece of clothing isn't working for you. Is the shirt too short for your torso, so you're constantly pulling it down? Do you love the pattern, but find the cut just a little too wide for your frame? Strauss says dialing in on those small details can give you really important information. For example, maybe after spending time with your wardrobe, you realize you prefer when your tops can show off a high waist.
Now let's sort of like memorize, that's a spot you like your clothes to hit. That's a spot you don't like your clothes to hit. When you're shopping now, that might be something to look for.
If you need to refresh your closet, but your body is in a place of flux, Strauss says look for flexible wardrobe options. Clothing rental services are one idea, especially for anyone going through big weight fluctuations quickly, like if you're pregnant or breastfeeding. She also suggests shopping secondhand stores because they're more sustainable, usually offer lower price points and unique items. You also want to look for specific clothes that offer more flexibility.
You know, a little bit of give or an adjustable feature like a wrap dress or a waist cinch or a drawstring or shoulder ties, or it's something that sits a little bit freer from the body.
The most important thing to remember, says Strauss, is that there's no right or wrong way to dress your body. There's a lot of messaging out there about what to wear and how to wear it, but try to tune that out. Personal style is just about agency and intention.
And all that other stuff, the rules, the trends, the body type stuff, that's not style, that's marketing.
For NPR's Life Kit, I'm Andy Tagle.
For more tips from Life Kit, go to npr.org/lifekit. This is NPR News.
From the University of Kansas, it's your place for NPR News, Kansas Public Radio. Available online anytime at kansaspublicradio.org. Thanks for joining us for All Things Considered here on a Saturday afternoon. Today on KPR's 105 Live, our in-studio guest is Freedy Johnson. Once named Rolling Stone's Songwriter of the Year, Freedy will be on hand for a live studio performance and interview, showcasing the best new, original, and noteworthy music from all across Kansas. It's 105 Live, today at 5, here on KPR 1. If you're listening over on KPR 2, it'll be the BBC World Service. Tonight in Northeast and East Central Kansas, mostly cloudy, lows in the mid-50s. For tomorrow, sunny, cooler, with highs in the mid-70s. Mostly clear, a low of 41 tomorrow night, and temperatures in the mid-60s by Monday. You're listening to Kansas Public Radio.
I'm Janine Herbst with these headlines. The Pentagon says it conducted airstrikes in Syria yesterday, targeting camps belonging to ISIS to disrupt the group's ability to organize and conduct strikes against the U.S. and its allies. The Pentagon says there were no civilian casualties in yesterday's attacks. Hundreds of 7-Elevens across North America will close. The Japanese-based parent company of the convenience stores blames slowing sales and foot traffic. So far, no word on which stores or when they will close. And a massive NASA spacecraft is ready to take off for Jupiter and its moon, Europa. The Europa Clipper will look beneath the moon's ice crust to try to find out whether conditions there could support life. I'm Janine Herbst, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Arm, committed to delivering innovative advanced computing designed to enable worldwide companies to unleash the capabilities and experiences of AI. The future of AI is built on Arm, arm.com. From Progressive Insurance, Progressive is looking for dedicated and forward-thinking individuals to join their growing team. More information, including application, at progressive.com/careers. And from listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Rob Schmitz. History usually preserves the stories of the winners and losers. But what about everyone else? In the 1970s, a librarian named Irene Ruiz interviewed dozens of Mexican immigrants and Latinos so they would be part of the historical record, too. From member station KCUR's podcast, A People's History of Kansas City, Mackenzie Martin has a story of an extraordinary librarian and the library she helped save.
Consuelo Cruz grew up on Kansas City's west side. And from the moment she started reading, around age 4, she spent a lot of time at the library.
Especially when it was hot.
It was the 70s, and a lot of houses didn't have central air. So they'd go to their local branch to keep cool. And to read, of course.
If I had homework to do, she's like, well, let's go to the library.
Consuelo liked the whole vibe there.
You know, like the old card catalogs.
Her favorite part about the library, though, was a person. Irene Ruiz, the branch librarian. A stylish, petite woman about 5 feet tall.
She would always walk around with a beret and leather driving gloves.
Irene was known for fostering a love of reading in even the most reluctant readers. She also spoke Spanish, which made her library a particularly inviting place for the Mexican immigrants and Latinos who settled on the West Side in such large numbers.
She always felt like their stories were important to share, and I'm so grateful that she did. I think she just had a love for the community that was contagious, and at least for me, it instilled a lot of pride.
Irene started at what was then known as the West Branch of the Kansas City Public Library in the 70s. At the time, there weren't many Spanish books in the collection, which really disappointed Irene. According to Julie Robinson at KCPL, not many places in the U.S. printed in Spanish. So Irene wrote letters overseas to book publishers in Spain and Latin America.
Then they would write back and say, okay, we can give you this, and this are the prices.
Soon, she was stocking Spanish language newspapers and movies, in addition to Spanish comic books and fotonovelas for children and adults. Irene was pretty much a one-stop shop for anything anyone needed. She helped people fill out paperwork and job applications, study for citizenship tests, and learn English. She'd act as an interpreter for undocumented people at the courthouse, even making phone calls on their behalf. So it seemed like no job was really too small. Like, she always had a second.
Oh, yes. She didn't sit around and think, golly, what should I do now? She always wanted people, no matter who you were, to be welcome. And to do that, the people in the library had to be welcoming.
Another unique thing about Irene, even for a librarian, was her passion for documenting life in Kansas City. In the 1970s and 80s, she conducted nearly 60 interviews in both English and Spanish. Her project is one of the only existing oral histories of Mexican immigrants coming to Kansas City.
This is Irene Ruiz interviewing Mr. Paul Rojas at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. Mr. Rojas?
Back then, Irene interviewed incredibly well-known Kansas Cityans, like Paul Rojas, Missouri's first Hispanic state legislator, in addition to other working folks in the neighborhood. A restaurant worker, a post office employee, a police officer, a nanny.
babysitter,
It's surreal to listen to them all these years later because of how candid everyone was. I mean, people opened up to her about the most pivotal moments in their lives.
Coming from the neighborhood that I come from and the background that I have, to be serving a salad to a governor and sticking around to listen to see what they talk about was worth it.
I want all Mexican Americans from this day forward to have that choice, to be capable of being a doctor or a lawyer or whatever they want to be.
Brett Reese, Irene's son, says his mom's goal was to change whose stories were preserved. She didn't like how history has mostly been written about the powerful.
Napoleon, Queen Elizabeth, it's all about winners. But who's going to tell the story of people that aren't losers? They're just regular Joes.
We have materials here that are not available anywhere else, Irene told the newspaper in 1996. And that's important, she said, because books open up a new world to you.
They were very adamant about equal rights and standing up for the underdog. They felt that they had to speak up for other Latinos because nobody else was going to do it.
Despite all the work Irene did for the West Branch Library, though, its importance to the neighborhood wasn't obvious to everyone. In the 1990s, the Kansas City Public Library Board actually considered shutting down the location entirely. Since the West Side is a walking community, that would have made the library way less accessible to residents. Julie Robinson says Irene went door to door to campaign against the move.
Then the community leaders got together, and that really changed a lot. It was very definite, you will leave the library on the West Side. The West Side wants their library.
In the end, the library board decided to not only keep the branch on the West Side, but majorly expand it. Comforted by the fact that the library was saved, Irene happily retired in 1996 at the age of 76. And a few years later, when the community was deciding what to call the new library, people aggressively advocated for naming it after their beloved retired librarian.
People were very vocal about it at board meetings.
Pete Savio was one of those vocal people. He remembers attending a pivotal board meeting and throwing a petition with hundreds of signatures in the board's face.
I raised my hand and said, well, my community has already spoken.
The Irene H. Reese Biblioteca de las Americas opened in September 2001, shortly before Irene's 81st birthday. And it's packed with plants, brightly colored murals, and sunshine streaming in through huge floor-to-ceiling windows. Right behind the checkout counter, there's even this vibrant watercolor painting of Irene. Kind eyes, beaming smile.
May she rest in peace. The lady deserves every credit that she got.
In addition to bilingual staff members and a huge selection of books in Spanish, the library also has a conversational Spanish club.
So it's like everyone within the neighborhood who just like wants to practice their Spanish, they come and just chat.
It also has yoga classes, a seed library, and birdwatching backpacks.
It comes with two types of binoculars, a small one and a big one, and then it also has a guide of Missouri birds.
That's so cool!
Yep.
When Julie Robinson took over as branch librarian here in 2003, Irene was a fixture. She'd regularly come in for story time and other special events. And she was well into her 80s by then. Something she somewhat covered up by dyeing her hair a really bright red.
That used to be a secret, by the way. She would never tell anyone what year she was born. She wouldn't even tell her children.
Why? Why did she keep it a secret?
She didn't want anyone to know how old she was. Because if you knew how old she was, then she would be treated as an old woman.
An old woman, Irene was not. She was still very active in the community. In 2006, she was even selected as a local hero at Primitivo Garcia World Language School, a few blocks north of the library. And Mrs. Eris's ESL class wrote this song for her.
Thank you, Irene. Thank you for your kindness. Thank you for the books. Thank you for the dreams. Thank you, Irene.
The song cemented Irene's place as a celebrity around town. I'm not kidding. A student once asked for her autograph. And realizing this, teachers used it to their advantage. When kids would misbehave, they threatened to call Irene.
If I have to call her to come in and talk to you, do you want me to do that? And it was like, no.
Why were they kind of afraid of her? Was she a little bit, could she be a little bit stern sometimes?
I think they were just afraid of disappointing her.
Oh, my God, that's so sweet.
I think that's really what it was. In their mind, she was such a great person, such a great model, that to disappoint her would be, you know, like disappointing the number one person in your life.
Irene died on September 3rd, 2023, at the age of 102. And according to her son, Brett, these are her tips for living so long. She loved to dance. She liked her martini, but never drank to excess. She watched what she ate. She never smoked. She didn't like the sun. And she did crosswords and read books well into her 90s. So, you know, do with that what you will.
That was an excerpt from member station KCUR's podcast, A People's History of Kansas City. You can find it at kcur.org or wherever you find your podcasts. A documentary featuring two musicians from a small African kingdom shows how country music has transcended international borders.
Standing next to the river, it's a wonder that's where we met.
Cousins Gazi Dusty Simulani and Linda Stones Masibi hail from the Kingdom of Eswatini, formerly known as Swaziland in southern Africa. Together, they make up the country duo Dusty and Stones.
Through storms and born dry winter, this river was always there.
Joining us now is the director of the documentary Dusty and Stones, Jesse Rudoy. Welcome to All Things Considered, Jesse.
Hi, Rob. Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So it is not every day that you hear about country musicians from the African kingdom of Eswatini. How on earth did you find these guys?
Yeah, the process just began with me kind of doing my own poking around the world via the internet, looking to see where there were pockets of country music fandom and where there were country music singers. And I quickly realized that there are country singers everywhere. They're all over the world. But what I also kind of quickly realized was that there was a lot of self-consciousness about being a country singer in, say, Poland or Norway or France. A kind of hallmark of non-American country music was these artists were kind of working double time in their music to obfuscate the fact that they were not American. So they would be singing in sort of put on Southern American accents or talking about Texas and Tennessee, even though they were from Poland or something. In the process of doing that research, I just stumbled upon a very cryptically named YouTube video that just said African country music. And it was the music video for Dusty and Stones, the first single they ever released called Home, which is all about their home village of Moyhoke that they grew up in. And I have to be honest, like within seconds of clicking on this video, it was so clear that Dusty and Stones' relationship to country music and their approach was just so much different from the other non-American country singers I'd come across.
Yeah, there's a degree of authenticity to both of them and how they relate to the music. You know, in the first line of the film, I think it's Dusty who's talking about how Dolly Parton's Tennessee mountain home makes him think of Moyhoke, his hometown. You know, I was wondering, like, what resonated with you about how these two cousins spoke about country music almost in like deeply spiritual, deeply heartfelt terms?
When I first spoke with Dusty and Stones, I learned that they had grown up down a dirt road, spent their afternoons herding the family's cattle. Their grandfather was a preacher that they went, you know, down to their small church down the road to hear him preach every Sunday. It was so clear that, you know, they were not exoticizing country music in any way.
You know, and despite the fact that, you know, not many people are showing up to their gigs in their home country, they are suddenly out of the blue invited to play at a Texas music festival. You know, there are several notable country musicians of color, but this is a largely white music genre. Here we have two African cousins who feel country music deep in their hearts. How did audiences in the United States react to that?
When we arrived in Jefferson, Texas, you know, I felt compelled to let them know what was causing me concern in noticing certain things about Jefferson, Texas. And then I think what we do capture in the film, that's you know, not said explicitly, but I think certainly for an American audience, is you see Dusty and Stone's unfortunate first brush with American racism. They encounter this band leader who is so dismissive and so rude to them and suggests they don't know how to play their music. He laughs at the name of Moyhoke, their hometown, because he sees it in a song title, and he laughs at the pronunciation. You can really see that they're just so thrown off guard. And it was painful to watch as a filmmaker who was there, while simultaneously knowing that this was making the film more relevant, more interesting, and more consequential. It was still so painful to watch them have to have their first brush with, frankly, thinly veiled American racism towards Black people.
Yeah, and it's an uncomfortable moment in the film as well. Just watching it is uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, but it's interesting. They're, at first, of course, their reaction is they're shocked, they're sad. Mm-hmm. But after a while, they start to say, well, look, we're here to play country music, and that's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. And so they're sort of down in the dumps after mm-hmm. this first sort of initial reaction in Jefferson, Texas. But then they decide to go out at night to a bar, and you almost see an opposite reaction. Talk a little bit about that.
Dusty and Stone's walking to this bar. It's a karaoke bar, and it's full of people wearing cowboy hats, singing these famous American country songs that Dusty and Stone's love. You know, I had been to Swaziland now several times when we filmed this, and I was seeing this through Dusty and Stone's eyes, who love country music so much, but who come from a place where there's not really organically occurring country music.
Right.
For them to walk into a bar where, you know, a guy in boots is on stage just singing the songs that they know, it was like walking into their wildest country music fantasies. And you could see that in their eyes as soon as they walked in there. You know, these guys always felt this intrinsic kinship from afar with people from the Southern United States, the people that made country music. And so I think in that scene, you're seeing them get to explore that kinship that felt from afar in person for the first time.
That's Jesse Rudoy, the director of the documentary Dusty and Stones. Jesse, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
For Saturday, that's All Things Considered from NPR News. Thanks for listening, and have a great evening.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from Bank of America, offering access to resources and digital tools designed to help local to global companies make moves for their businesses. Learn more at bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness. From Indeed, designed to be an end-to-end hiring solution for businesses of all sizes to attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one platform. Learn more at indeed.com/NPR. And from listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
From the University of Kansas, it's your place for NPR News, Kansas Public Radio. KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, FM 91.5. KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, FM 89.7. KANV and KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City, FM 91.3. KANQ Chanute, FM 90.3. K210 CR in Atchison, 89.9. And K258BT in Manhattan, 99.5. And we're always online for you at kansaspublicradio.org. Thanks for joining us here on a Saturday afternoon. This month's KPR Community Spotlight is on Cherry Street Youth in Chanute, a Christian-based ministry formed to help develop children emotionally, spiritually, physically, and academically with after-school classes in gardening, cooking, art, and more. Details at cherrystreet.org. Tonight in northeast and east-central Kansas, mostly cloudy, lows in the mid-50s. For tomorrow, sunny, cooler with highs in the mid-70s. Mostly clear tomorrow night with a low of 41 and temperatures in the mid-60s by Monday. You're listening to Kansas Public Radio.
Welcome to 105 Live. This is Nick Carswell joining you for the next hour, showcasing the best new, original, and noteworthy music from all 105 counties across Kansas. Glad you can join me. Coming up this hour, we're going to feature music from the Match Sellers, Christina Graves Band, Heidi Lund Luke, Run With It, and more, as well as our live studio guest, who is Freddie Johnston. He joined us for some tunes, interview, discussion, reminiscing of his time in Kansas, including growing up in Kinsley, Kansas, as well as his time here in Lawrence, and a career spanning more than 30 years. So with some live tracks and interview, that's Freddie Johnston, our in-studio guest, coming up a little later. First up, we are headed to Wichita. This band is Social Cinema. This track is John the Baptist. It's 105 Live on Kansas Public Radio.
Jesus Christ is doing time for bumping lines on the weekend. Not for organized crime. Save the kids, donation baskets. We'll pray over their caskets. But if you Jesus is Lord, then I'm John the Baptist. And I preach the word every day. So put your hands to the sky and dance for sake.
Tell me.
105 Live on Kansas Public Radio. That is Heidi Lynn Gluck. The track is All I See Is Magic. That was from her 2023 album, Migrate or Die. That was one of the most acclaimed albums to come out of Lawrence last year. And you may have actually heard Heidi on KPR last week. She was the featured soloist at a Lawrence Community Orchestra event, opening their season with a Voices of Women concert. She was the featured soloist. Heidi also features in the Rose Line, as well as a wide variety of collaborations with artists from all over the country. So I'm excited to bring you more music featuring Heidi in the future, as well as her original material. Again, that track was All I See Is Magic. Before that, we had Social Cinema from Wichita. They're playing a whole bunch of tour dates at the moment. They're on the East Coast in Philadelphia. They'll be in New York, coming back through Columbus and Cleveland in Ohio, and with a hometown show on October 25th at Wave in Wichita. That was Social Cinema, and that track was John the Baptist. Okay, up next, this was a track that came through our submissions form on kansaspublicradio.org/105live. If you're a Kansas artist with music to submit, or you know somebody who is, head on over there and submit a track. This one came in from the Truant Kids. They're a Kansas-based indie songwriting duo comprised of lifelong friends Walter Sunrise and Nile Rivers. They're formed in 2021. The group released their debut record in 22. And this track is from their follow-up, Heart, which is a post-punk-inspired double LP. The band's currently working on a third album. The track is No More Mondays, Tuesdays in July. The band is Truant Kids, here on 105 Live.
Song. days that come in July, love.
I've been waiting for a ghost like you. I got these walls that you can walk on through. Your voice, it echoes down these empty halls. Your touch is soft, come and break my fall. I've been sleeping when the sun comes up. The days are torture without your touch. Wake up again to the light of the moon. I've been waiting for a ghost like you.
You hold me, I'm fading, I gotta let go. Come and save me, take control. Are you my demon or my angel of gold? Is there a heaven you know? Is there a heaven you know? Now, I'm waiting for a ghost like you. Now, I'm waiting for a ghost like you.
Take my hands, tie me to the bed. Give me a drink of words. Whisper words I can't forget. You bite my chest to make me wanna live. You're a demon, play me for a fool. You're an angel, only speak the truth. Say your prayers, make me new. I've been waiting for a ghost like you.
You hold me, I'm fading, I gotta let go. Come and save me, take control. Are you my demon or my angel of gold? Is there a heaven you know? Is there a heaven you know? Now, I'm waiting for a ghost like you. Now, I'm waiting for a ghost like you.
Out of Kansas City, that is Run With It. The track is Ghost Like You. Miguel Antonio with that excellent vocal. I love the way he leaves that note hanging out there. He is the front man for that electrifying band, Run With It. They can be seen on a whole bunch of stages around the Kansas City area, as well as some tour dates in and around the rest of Kansas. I know they have an Emporia date on December 14th coming up not too far away. That is a single, Ghost Like You, and the band is Run With It. Okay, up next we're heading over to the live performance studio where we'll be hearing some live tracks and interview with Kansas's own Freddie Johnston. Coming up next here on 105 Live.
From the University of Kansas, it's your place for NPR News, Kansas Public Radio, 91.5 Lawrence, 89.7 Emporia, and always online for you at kansaspublicradio.org. Support for 105 Live on KPR comes from Theodore Lawrence, presenting Hedwig and the Angry Inch, a musical journey of love and loss, one weekend only, Thursday, October 24th through Saturday, October 26th, suggested for mature audiences. More at theaterlawrence.com. And the Topeka Zoo, presenting the 5th annual Zoo Lights, beginning Friday, November 22nd, with new light sections, appearances by Santa, and fun for all ages. Tickets available now at topekazoo.org. Tonight in northeast and east central Kansas, mostly cloudy, lows in the mid-50s. For tomorrow, sunny and cooler, with highs in the mid-70s, a low of 41 for tomorrow night. You're listening to Kansas Public Radio.
All right, with a career spanning several decades, 9 albums from Kinsey, Kansas to New York City in the Mojave Desert, very excited to welcome Freddie Johnston here to Kansas Public Radio.
Hello, Nick.
Hello.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
It's great to be here.
And first of all, welcome back to Lawrence. I understand you spent some time here in Lawrence in the 80s.
In the 80s, I did.
What's it like to be back?
Oh, it's great. You know, I come back now and again. I moved here from Kinsey, Kansas, as you said, and it was my, you know, this was the big city, man. It was quite a change.
So were you performing at that point, songwriting? How did Lawrence affect your...
Well, I moved here to go to school, allegedly. And I lasted one semester at Hassinger Hall in the dorms. It was the best semester, the best months of my life forever. You know, it just will be.
Yeah.
It was just too fun. But it couldn't last. And the next semester I crashed. And, you know, I slept in my dorm room all day. And finally my roommate says, what are you going to do? I'm going to drop out, I guess. So I dropped out. That was 1981. And I was just like many young folks in this town today, you know, they've got out of their small town, but they don't know what the heck to do, you know, and they're in this college town. So I just living the life and with a dream of, well, if I just keep playing guitar and writing songs, you know, I'm sure I'll succeed. You know, it's just the dumbest idea in the world. But that was my plan.
Yeah. And how was the scene in Lawrence musically at the time?
At the time, I was, when I came out of the dorm and moved downtown with Irwin Brown, I'll be dropping names as much as I can.
Sure.
My buddy Irwin Brown, he used to work at KJHK. I was living in a loft with my buddy Frank Luce from Get Smart. So I was great buddies with them. You know, I played with them last year here. Hmm. My old friends, Get Smart. And, but I really had this thing for the embarrassment from Wichita.
Sure.
And they were the whole, anything that I've learned, the way I play or any of the chords I've learned or any of my influences are directly from the embarrassment. I mean, of course, I learned other songs like Neil Young songs, I guess, Tom Petty and stuff, but always just wanted to play like Bill Guthrie and do that. If you want the long story, what happened is I came out of the dorm, Lawrence, and then I went to New York City for a year or so in 1983. It really fell on my face. It was a real, me and Kenny Folk, we had just enough money left to get back on the bus back to Kansas. It really happened that way. And so I had my second shot at Lawrence. And in that second shot, in like 84, 85, I started playing music and doing 4-track recordings. I bought a Fostex on installments down at Richardson Music. He was so nice to me. Rest in peace, Richard. He sold me my first Tele. So I was doing that. And I was living in a house on Tennessee Street, and me and my buddy Dave Whitmer, my roommate, we'd just sit around playing music and writing songs and recording with two sharp boom boxes. We'd record into one and then play it back while recording into the other one. Very, very primitive, you know. Like after a couple overdubs, you don't know what you're hearing, kind of.
Yeah.
But it sounded actually okay. So we made this tape. We didn't know what to do. So we shared a cassette tape. We each took a side, like Dave Whitmer, and at the time, my name was Freddie Johns, which changed. It's a long story I'm not going to get into. But Johnston is my mother's maiden name, anyway.
Okay.
And Freddie is a name she gave me,
right.
So it's legit. Anyway, so we made about 10 copies. We overdubbed on the cassette, then we made copies of them, you know, so they were really lo-fi. And we made a lyric insert, photocopied it, and sold them down at Love Records there on 9th Street, which I lived right across the street. And anyway, it got reviewed in the Lawrence Journal World.
Wow.
The cassette was picked up by my friend Doug Hitchcock, who was a journalist at Lawrence Journal World. They're like, hey, man, you hear there's a review of your tape in the paper? No. Yeah. We've got like 5 copies for sale, you know. So anyway, it was really the start of things. Doug Hitchcock really gave me my boost in, you know, whatever. That's as far back as I can go.
Yeah.
And then I met him, and I was like, man, you know, thank you for loving my music. And we started a band. So Doug played drums, and my friend Todd Kitchen played guitar, you know, and then Doug Snodgrass played bass.
So
that was my first band, and I wasn't very good at it, I got to admit. You know, I just know I wasn't that easygoing.
Yeah.
So we played gigs as the Animal Bones, and we did a few shows, and it was fun. I don't even remember how well it went, but the first recordings I did for the record, The Trouble Tree, my first album, I did with those guys. at United Sound in KC. During that time, when I was writing songs, I got a drumming gig with my friends Dalton Howard and the Go-Cats. I conned my way into it, or lied my way into it. I said I could play drums because I could fake it. We had a drum kit at the Loft, and Sean Kelly told me I could play. And so Dalton said, come on down, man. You know, and so that day I had to go to the Journal World Classifieds, you know, and get a kit for $100. I got an Apollo kit and showed up at rehearsal. I don't think I wasn't even like, I needed help setting the damn kit up. You know, I'm not a drummer. Anyway, they were very nice. They were super fun. And they taught me how to go on stage and stuff. I just drank too much and I was not a good drummer. So
that was maybe you getting on stage for the first time.
The first time, yeah. Yeah. And I didn't belong on stage. but I was doing that while I was doing my original music.
Right.
And none of it that memorable. I mean, you know, my songs, I mean, as far as my, who knows. And that continued. You know, when I moved to New York in 86, I just worked temp jobs for 3 or 4 years until I finally got a record deal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm old enough now to look back and say, what was that kid thinking? What were you doing? I just want to knock him on the head like in 1986. Like, hey, go back to school. You still got time. Get a degree. You know, really.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, too late now, man.
Yeah.
If it hadn't worked out, you know, it would have been a worse story. But it worked out for me somehow.
They said, we found another drummer. I said, that's okay. I packed up and loaded up. Took the long way back to the house. Pulled up as the rain was starting. Saw my left foot was low. I let the dog out in the back. Smoking my last Marlboro. Hey, yeah, hey, yeah, hey, oh, hey, yeah. That's the way it goes. Hey, yeah, hey, yeah, hey, oh, hey, yeah. You gotta learn to keep time, you know.
As good a lead guitar player as I am a drummer.
They said you're a great guy, but we're looking for something else. We are all looking for something. I said to myself, sat on the couch watching Rockford, doing paradiddles on my knee. You know, Jim, someday I'm gonna win. Here we go now, 1, 2, 3. Hey, yeah, hey, yeah, hey, oh, hey, yeah. That's the way it goes. Hey, yeah, hey, yeah, hey, oh, hey, yeah. You gotta learn to keep time, you know. Helps if you have your own ride, you know. Hey, yeah, hey, yeah, hey, oh, hey, yeah.
You know, Fred, you're a really fun guy and stuff, and we really like your little round glasses and your punk rock attitude, but you just can't keep the tempo.
They said we found another drummer. I said, that's okay.
That is Freddie Johnston on Kansas Public Radio with an unreleased song, The Lonely Drummer. Semi-autobiographical, are you giving any?
Semi, yeah.
Very nice.
And there's a fired drummer in all of us, I think, somehow.
Well, I wanted to ask about your songwriting process, and I'm curious how that relates to, because it's internal, it's personal, a lot of storytelling, a lot of character in your songs, and well, now you see how audiences react. So that, it's a connection still.
Oh yeah, no, it's a great connection. As far because for me, like the songs will appear like this ghost or this person sometime in the night or in the day or whatever. There'll be this groove and this melody, and I'll be like, oh. You know, I'll have to stop what I'm doing and go to the phone mm-hmm. and sing it. And that's the start of a multi-year process
okay.
yeah. of refining it to a song. But it always comes out. You know, it's never like, oh, I'm going to write a song now. Mm-hmm. So that is what I mean. That's my process. And then once they're there, they're like saying, okay, I want to be this. I want to be this. Give uh-huh. me some words, you know, and that's the problem. The words take just way too long. It's not efficient or in any way. A linear process. It just, I wish it was.
That's fascinating. So presumably you have a lot of songs in development over years, you said.
Oh gosh.
And with this last album, 7 years between, and of course we have that pandemic that kind of warped time a little bit, so.
Yeah, there's too many of them, but luckily everybody does it differently. I'm not in any way gonna, almost I don't even want to describe somebody else's method, let alone, you know, sure. pass judgment on it.
Fair.
I just know that people do it differently. Mm-hmm. Like Ryan Adams writes a song or two a day probably,
yeah.
according to what I know, you know, and it's like, I don't know how the heck he does that, but he does it. And so that's, I wouldn't have any more idea about that maybe than he would understand me taking 4 years to write a song.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, he would maybe say like, why? It's like, well, just does, man.
Yeah.
So, and then some can be done fairly directly. You know, it's not always that, but I don't know. If you're going to take all the trouble to come up with a groove and a melody that's like yours, you better sign off on every single word. You know, I'm sorry. It's not efficient, as I said.
How about another song? Is there anything from that era, from those second or third records that would
yeah.
fit your mood for the moment?
Sure. You know, I remember writing all these songs on the Trouble Tree, my first album, and I didn't really know what they were about because you've got to learn. You're just like, oh, those words sound cool. I'll put them with these words. And you think it makes sense, and it kind of does, but, you know, it's, you know what I mean? It's like you're having fun. Then I wrote a song called Tucum Carry, and I realized, wow, I wrote an entire lyric that tells a story. It's like the first time. Okay. You know, the other songs have been like, they were funny, but it was like, what the heck is he talking about? I think, in a word, pretentious would be what it was. But this song, Took Him Carry, was it? I thought that it was, I was like, wow, I think I got one done for the first time, you know. He was out sunning with the youth. He was seen in a damaging light, picking popcorn from his tooth, ordering cocktails with his eyes. She had a face like a dumped out ashtray, spitting out straight abuse, vocabulary of a broken marquee and a wit she couldn't use. Get your feet off of my dashboard. What do you think the damn thing's for? At least try to look pretty. Tonight we're going into Tucum Carry. Pull the wet bill from his shoe, wrinkling a dignified face by the broken heart-shaped pool, in a less than enchanted state. She was off at the little girl's room with a boy from the Trouble Tree bar, snapping her jeans while the radio sings, I love you just the way you are. Get your feet off of my dashboard. What do you think the damn thing's for? At least try to look pretty.
tonight we're going into two. Come carry, get your feet off of my dashboard. What do you think the damn thing's for? At least try to look pretty. Tonight we're going into two. Come carry.
From the debut album, The Trouble Tree, from 1990.
It's produced by my good friend Chris Butler, the great Chris Butler, the songwriter for The Waitresses.
Tucumcari was that song.
Tucumcari. Yeah, Tucumcari, New Mexico.
And really, and yeah, that was so the first time you felt like you had a story, you had a narrative or a lyric.
One of the first, I'd say so, one that I liked.
Yeah.
You know, the others did have stories, mm-hmm. but they were just like, I don't know, just not good.
That's the editor.
The kid needed more work, you know, it seems like.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Nick.
Be up for another song before we...
Sure. What's a good one to do? Like one that people know?
I mean, yeah, sure. People would be happy to hear one of your hits by Reputation or another.
Why not? Let's just go for the one that is just like... Because this song was just a dumb song I had laying around. And we were making a record, making This Perfect World, up in Woodstock, New York, at a studio called Dreamland. And it was an old church. And it snowed 2 feet during the recording. And the band all went back to New York. So I was like, okay, we're done recording. It's Christmas time. And we were there trapped in the studio. It was 2 feet of snow, working on the mixes. And Butch said, hey, Freddie, we need another song for this record. Have you got anything? You know, like, it's always the case. If any musicians out there, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. Perhaps you do, Nick. Like, mm-hmm. When you're making a record, there's always this moment toward the end. We're like, you got one more.
Yeah.
You know, and often that becomes like Love Shack with the B-52s, which was recorded in the same studio as Bad Reputation. It came out that same way. They were like, we got something, don't we? We've got one more thing. And that they just started grooving.
And what do you think it is, the energy associated with
it's
that?
It's the not – yeah, it's the beat the take syndrome. It's like, I can do better than that. It's like, we've already got one in the can. Let's just try to beat it, you know?
Hmm.
Or it's the not caring as much.
Hmm.
That does help. But this song – Bad Reputation. I played it in the kitchen there at Dreamland. And I'm sure I did something like this. Like, I know I got a bad reputation. Yeah. And Butch was listening with my manager, Chris. And he's like, that's it. That's the one. And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah. Let's go record it right now. And I said, Butch, we can't record it right now. The band is in New York. And he said, I was a drummer. In Spooner in Firetown in Madison, Wisconsin. I'm like, okay. And the engineer, John, said, I'm a pretty good bass player. And I was like, okay then. And so Butch went out into the studio after dinner and he started practicing because he hadn't played for a while, I guess. So funny. You know, world famous producer Butch Vig out there practicing his drums. And the engineer and I were sitting and listening and recording some of it. And he did this fill, you know, at the stop. He went, plop, plop, boom. Boom. And he went, oh, God, oh, this is so Neanderthal. Roll it back. I'm going to re-record that. And I remember the one time I ever got to produce Butch Vig. You know, the engineer and I said, no way, dude. We are keeping that. That is gold. So that I hope Butch remembers it that way. I think that's pretty much what happened. I hope I haven't rounded it off too much. So that's how that happened. And we did that song that night. I was like, oh, I didn't even like it. I really didn't. I was like, God, you guys, you're really pushing me here. And that's how it happened. I got talked into it. And at the end, I'm like, happy as a clam, you know. But the bookend of that story, the hey, musicians, I know you came up with the songs and you think you know a lot, but you are not the best judge of your songs.
Mm-hmm.
That's just sad. It's really sad when you finally realize that. It took me decades to realize that. Maybe mm-hmm. it's only been the last 2 days I've realized that. Like, I better just face it that if I like a song, it doesn't mean it's my best song.
Hmm.
And when I make a new set of songs, I get ready to hear what song people gravitate toward because it's not going to be the one I think.
And this is where your collaborators and your producers and those people that you can rely on might
who
help
you can
you.
Trust. I mean, they're listening. Mm-hmm. You know, again, back to just a name drop till I break my toe. But you know, that's what T-Bone said. He's like, I am the representative of your listeners, man. Mm. I am here. You've got to listen to me. You know, I know what I want to hear. It's really, you know, he's a great psychologist. He had a great way of getting you going in your head. So here we go. Thanks a lot, Nick.
No,
thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. This has been
fascinating. This is so fun. It's a good homecoming. So I'll see you next time.
Thank you.
I know I got a bad reputation, and it isn't just talk, talk, talk. Still, I'm gonna give you everything that I haven't got. I couldn't ever want conversation if it wasn't for the lies, lies, lies. Still, I'm gonna give you everything before you close your eyes. Suddenly, I'm on the street. 7 years disappear below my feet. Been breaking down. Do you want me now? Do you want me now? Suddenly I'm down in Herald Square. Looking in the crowd, your face is everywhere. Just turning around. Do you want me now? Do you want me now? You're just wasting your time, time, time. You know about the best I'll ever be. I see it in your eyes. Yeah, I know I got a bad reputation, and it isn't just talk, talk, talk. Still, I'm gonna give you everything that I haven't got. Suddenly I'm on the street. 7 years disappear below my feet. Been breaking down. Do you want me now? Do you want me now? Suddenly I'm in another place. Looking in the crowd, I think I see your face. Just turning around. Do you want me now? 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 Don't you think I've heard the talk? Nobody's gonna tell me who to love. Been breaking down. Do you want me now? Do you want me now? Suddenly I'm down in Herald Square. Looking in the crowd, your face is everywhere. Just turning around. Do you want me now? Do you want me now? I'll be breaking down, 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 down. Be breaking down, down, down. Down, 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 down. We're breaking down, 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 down.
Recorded live in the live performance studio here at Kansas Public Radio, that is Freddie Johnston. He joined us earlier this year when he was in town for the Folk Alliance Conference in Kansas City. And since then, Freddie has actually been back to Kinsley, Kansas, where he produced a mural collaborating with Lawrence's own visual artist, David Lowenstein. So that is a nice connection that Freddie continues to have with his hometown of Kinsley. And we hope to see him back in Kansas more often. Thanks to Jason Sloat for producing that session, and thanks to Freddie for joining us. Okay, after the break, we're going to preview a show happening tonight in Lawrence, Kansas, and more music with the Christina Graves Band on 105 Live.
From the University of Kansas, it's your place for NPR News, Kansas Public Radio, 91.5 Lawrence, 91.3 Junction City, and always online for you at kansaspublicradio.org.
You're listening to 105 Live here on a Saturday evening. Tonight on the next Live at Green Lady Lounge, it's the jazzy fingers of guitarist Brian Baggett. Join us for an hour of original KC jazz, played by the Brian Baggett Trio. Live at Green Lady Lounge is tonight at 6, here on Kansas Public Radio. And for tonight in northeast and east central Kansas, mostly cloudy, lows in the mid-50s. For tomorrow, sunny and cooler with highs in the mid-70s. For tomorrow night, mostly clear, a low of 41. On Monday, sunny with highs in the mid-60s and a low of 42 for Monday evening. You're listening to Kansas Public Radio.
I see the world being slowly transformed into a wilderness. I hear the approaching thunder that one day will destroy us too. I feel the suffering of millions. And yet, when I look up at the sky, I somehow feel that everything will change for the better, that this cruelty too will end, that peace and tranquility will return once more. And in the meantime, I must hold on to my ideals. Perhaps the day will come when I'll be able to realize them.
My very best. world ends.
Another live track here on 105 Live on Kansas Public Radio. We did not record that one here ourselves. That is from a live album from the Match Sellers. The track is Something I've Wanted to Say, and they paired that at the beginning of the track. You heard a brief excerpt from Anne Frank's diary. I was lucky enough to see the Match Sellers earlier this week in Salina, Kansas, where they performed this pairing of literary quotes from books and bluegrass, as they described it, and it was a great show, so I just had to share that track with you. Hailing from the heartland of America, the Match Sellers infused traditional roots and bluegrass music with a wild modern twist and call it Kansas City Bluegrass. They're based in Wyandotte County, and that one was recorded live at a warehouse in Merriam, Kansas, in front of a live audience. The album is live at the warehouse, and that is the Match Sellers. I'm very eager to have them into the studio, actually, to do that whole performance, pairing literary readings with their own brand of humor. Somewhat dark, but very engaging performance. So from Kansas City, that is the Match Sellers. Okay, I've got time for a couple more songs I want to squeeze in before we leave you. Next up is a track from the Christina Graves Band. Christina Graves is based here in Lawrence, and we're actually going to feature a live session from Christina Graves that was recorded live in the Bottleneck as part of the Mixmaster Conference earlier in September. So we have a full live session that I'm really excited to share with you. That evening, we also recorded live tracks from the Draper Family Band, the Swallowtails, and Eddie Moore and his electric group. So we're going to be hearing a lot of live tracks that were recorded live in the Bottleneck on future editions of 105 Live. Excited to have folks in studio for live sessions, but we love to get out onto a stage in our region and capture some live tracks with an audience. And these few were recorded at the Bottleneck. And that pairs nicely with our last track I'm going to play for you, which is by Hembree. And they are playing in the Bottleneck in Lawrence, Kansas tonight, October 5th. And we'll actually be recording that session as well. And if that's not enough of a connection, there is another fun connection between these two acts that I'm going to leave you with. The Christina Graves Band has Lawrence guitarist John Flynn on electric guitar. Love some of his work on these tracks, these album tracks, as well as his live show. And John Flynn is the father of Isaac Flynn, who is the lead singer for Hembree, who are playing tonight in the Bottleneck. So we're keeping it in the family, keeping it with good Lawrence connections to leave you with 105 Live this week. Don't forget to check out kansaspublicradio.org/105live. You can get links to all of the artists. We want you to find your new favorite band here on 105 Live and keep tuning in to Kansas Public Radio. I'm going to leave you with these two tracks, Swinging on the Stars by Christina Graves and from Hembree, Younger. Thanks for joining me, Nick Carswell, on 105 Live on Kansas Public Radio.
every time to see you. A ticking time bomb self-destructs. We used to talk for hours, now I feel like giving up. Oh, what if we become? Cause when I was younger, I wanted you like you would not believe. When I was younger, my heart was singing right outside my sleeve. And I don't want this to be next to you, with you right next to me. But when I was younger, I couldn't see. And they said you would leave, you would leave.
Support for 105 Live on KPR comes from Theodore Lawrence, presenting Hedwig and the Angry Inch, a musical journey of love and loss, one weekend only, Thursday, October 24th through Saturday, October 26th. Suggested for mature audiences. More at theodorelawrence.com. And the University of Kansas Libraries, a state, regional, and federal depository providing the resources and partnerships necessary for both research and academic success. More information available on social media at KU Libraries. From the University of Kansas, it's your place for NPR News, Kansas Public Radio, KANU and KANU HD1 Lawrence, KANH and KANH HD1 Emporia, KANV and KANV HD1 Olsburg Junction City, KANQ Chanute, and always online at kansaspublicradio.org.
Welcome to the Green Lady Lounge, located at 1809 Grand Boulevard in Kansas City, Missouri. At the Green Lady, there's live jazz every night of the week till 3 a.m., performed by some of KC's finest bands. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Thanks for joining us. Today, it's another session with the Brian Baggett Trio, which appears every week at the Green Lady. Brian's a guitarist, not only with his own trio, but also in Ken Lovren's organ jazz trio, and with Guitar Elation. Brian is joined here by bassist Seth Lee and drummer Sam Platt, live at Green Lady Lounge.
Thank you so much. That's a new one. It's called Jazz Fingers. Thank you. next one is a ballad. This is called Easy on the Cheese.